3, 2, 1. That's right. You're listening to the It's My Time podcast, a recording of the experiences, past and present, of everyday people.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
and now, here's your host,
you know who it is,
the one, the only,
let's go.
Asher Chua.
Hey, welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Nice to be here, Asher. Thank you for the invite, and I'm looking forward to this. I definitely appreciate a fellow YouTuber's content. I watch your stuff, bro. It's fire, and if I'm anticipation, I'm looking forward to joining the movement and kind of getting on board and talking with you. Looking forward to this.
Appreciate it. I feel like I just got inducted into the YouTube space. I hadn't seen myself as a YouTuber before, but just to introduce you to the audience, who do you say you are?
Who do I say that I am? So I guess first off, I'm a follower of Christ. I am a happily married man. Love my wife, 3 years in the game. I was out there like a lot of other young men, found a woman that was worth settling down with. And I have been on the journey of building generational wealth, I would say, like the last, 15 to 20 years of my life. I got serious about it about 10 years ago. And I would describe myself as a very athletic, very intelligent, very hardworking man. I believe in family. I believe in pushing the generations forward as far as community involvement, as far as financialization, and as far as financial emancipation, Mm-hmm. And just being a positive role model as a Black man in this world that we live in, where a lot of times people who look like us, we get kind of crapped on by the media, by social media and things like that. I like the idea of pretty much destroying every stereotype that I kind of see that I have about Black men and about Black people in general out there.
Mm, I like that. And I guess, as you mentioned, financial
emancipation,
financipation. I like how you put it, but also it's kind of taking me back to one of the things you mentioned about meeting your wife and deciding to make that decision. It's been now 3 years. And one thing that I've heard about generational wealth is that you need to actually have a generation to have wealth. And I'm curious, what made you decide to make the decision to get married and to pursue that path?
Well, first off, like I would say a lot of people who look like us, we kind of grew up with some kind of basis of being in the church. My earliest memories were literally sitting in my grandmother's lap in a pew, hearing a 4 or 5 hour sermon in a sweaty Baptist church with no air conditioning. Like most Black people, I mean, that was kind of what we grew up on. So I kind of always had in the back of my brain that marriage is essentially where you want to be. Obviously, you have the spiritual component to it. Mm-hmm. And then just realistically, from another perspective, I dated a lot as I graduated from college. So I was a single man in, let's say, Chicago, Miami, Orlando, upstate New York for a little bit, Connecticut, mm-hmm. places like that. And I just started noticing that after around 27, 28, the bars and the clubs and the church single ministries, they just weren't fun anymore. I just kind of got to the point where, all right, same girl, different face, same party, different music, same venue, different, same person, different venue. So you get kind of sick and tired of the same stuff. And eventually I just got to the point where I said, okay, this is old. I'm tired of this. Yeah. And then when my older brother got married and some of my friends went to college and started getting married, I kind of started seeing, okay, these guys are coming home to one woman. They have a wife. Mm-hmm. They're happily married. Their kids are starting to be born. I started realizing that there was something seriously missing. And being a single man in Miami, I could just say that just seeing the lifestyle and the where people were going who were living that life, as far as being 50 years old, still going to bars and clubs, so as far as being 60 years old and still being in church singles ministries, I was like, I absolutely do not want to be that. it gets old, to be honest, yeah. with you. So because once again, I had a basis in Christ and I had a basis in just kind of growing up in the church, I knew what kind of woman I was looking for. When I got serious around 28, 29, as far as finding her, I just mm-hmm. was not finding that kind of woman. So I got patient. I worked on myself. And I started just kind of looking for my wife. And when I met my wife, I said, okay, this woman was raised to be a wife. And I pursued her. I courted her, as the old people would say, mm-hmm. for marriage. That's the spiritual / physical component. I got sick and tired of the bars and the clubs and I wanted a wife. From a financial perspective, once again, I do push financial emancipation and people essentially financially freeing themselves from generational poverty. Married people make a lot more money. And I didn't realize how much wealthier married people were until I started up my YouTube channel. I started actually doing research as far as financial emancipation. Mm-hmm. So just so you know, the typical child that's born into a two-parent nuclear family is 4 times more likely to move from poverty and into the middle class. The typical child that's born into a single parent household or whatever, particularly a single mother household, is four times more likely to move from the middle class into poverty. Mm-hmm. Additionally, when I started doing my research, the average married couple has anywhere from 28 to 35 times more wealth than a single person. Mm-hmm. So when you start looking at the numbers or whatever, marriage is the ultimate cheat code, particularly in the Black community, I would say, as far as building generational wealth. Because at the end of the day, if I'm a man, I'm making $50,000, and I make a lot more than $50,000, I'm just using this for an example. But if I'm a man and I make $50,000 and I marry a beautiful woman who makes $45,000, we are a $95,000 a year household or whatever. So if we essentially live on my income, we invest my wife's $45,000 into index funds, into mutual funds, into REITs or whatever, into real estate or into businesses, we can essentially stack paper. But if you're a single man or a single woman trying to raise, let's say, two or three kids on a $45,000 a year income, good luck buying a house, good luck buying property, good luck buying land. So to me, marriage is the ultimate cheat code. That's from a financial perspective. And from an emotional standpoint, like I said earlier, I did not want to be that's 55, 60-year-old guy in the bars or the clubs by myself, going to church singles ministries by myself. I didn't want to be that dude. So from an emotional standpoint, I think God, he put us in his planet to basically do everything with a partner. And when you have the right partner or whatever, everything in life is better. I want to be that 70-year-old man who's still dancing all night at salsa venues or whatever with my beautiful wife. I want to be that 75-year-old guy on a cruise telling basically, yeah, I've been married to this woman for 35 years and it's been beautiful. I want for 40 years, it's been beautiful. I wanted to be that guy. I want to be that guy, I guess. So to me, the emotional component of it is it's just better to grow old with a woman that you love instead of growing old by yourself, just trying to smash everything that you can. To me, that's a lonely lifestyle.
Yeah. And I guess on that note, how'd you learn to work on yourself, or what were some of the things that you worked on that you started seeing like a positive feedback loop on, to where you're like, okay, I'm going in the right direction?
So first off, what I did, Asher, was I started hanging out with people who were actually married. Not to be disrespectful, but as men, we look at people who have receipts that we can show. So for instance, I'm a certified personal trainer in addition to knowing financial patient. Mm-hmm. If I had a dude trying to give me health or fitness tips and the brother is 355 pounds and he's 5'2", 350 pounds or whatever, he's got knee issues, and has had like 6 or 7 heart attacks, I'm going to be like, no offense, bro, but why am I taking health advice from you if you're sloppy and you're obese and you're morbidly overweight? It doesn't make any sense. If I'm going to take financial advice from a person and the person is telling me and they filed for bankruptcy 9 times and they failed at every business they started, I'm going to be like, no offense, I'm not going to take financial advice from you. The dating world is the same way. I did not take dating or marriage advice from dudes that never had girlfriends and guys that were never married, period. Mm-hmm. If I never saw you with a woman, you were trying to give me advice about women, I was like, okay, all right, sure. Yeah. And I would just ignore it. So to answer your question, I hung out with people like my older brother. I hung out with people like some of the happily married dudes that I kind of saw at church, some of the happy married guys I saw that I work with in corporate America. I started spending time with them and started saying, okay, how do you guys operate around a woman? How do you get one woman to love you for 25 years and she's still madly in love with you? I started observing how married dudes started rolling with it. And I kind of started picking up certain things. And then secondly, I'm a firm believer in reading. So there were a lot of books that I read or whatever in regards to how to become a better man. Because mentally, readers are leaders, everybody. So I started reading books or whatever in regards to, okay, this is essentially how you become a better man financially. Because at the end of the day, women want to be with a man who can provide for them. Okay, this is basically how you become a better, this is your love language or whatever. The book Gary Chapman, The 5 Love Languages. I started reading books like that. And additionally, something else I tell all men to do, Asher, is I've always been a fighter. My entire life, I was always a brother that got in fights, not because I was a violent dude, but just because being tall and light-skinned and the new kid on the block everywhere we went as a military kid, people would always try to test me and my brothers, and I was always the one that would fight. So when I got old enough, I got to the point where I started boxing and kickboxing, getting to jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, MMA, mixed martial arts, and stuff like that. So I have actually physically fought in cages. I physically fought in boxing rings. I've physically been in other countries and fought and stuff like that for money. And from a dating perspective, I would advise all men to get into combat sports, because when your woman knows that you can physically protect her if an environment is dangerous, as a man, that puts you in a very good place from a confidence perspective, but more importantly, it makes your woman comfortable around you. And if your wife or your girlfriend is comfortable around you, it puts you in a better space physically as well as mentally. So I got very deeply into combat sports or whatever in my early 20s, and throughout literally till this day, I still compete. I still train and everything. So I worked on everything. I worked on my finances or whatever. I figured out how can I go from making $50,000 to making well over six figures. I worked on my mental strength as far as reading books. And I also worked on my physical abilities or whatever, and started training and doing things like that. Even to this day, no one can ever guess my age or whatever. And I love that. So that's kind of how I worked on myself. And then the last thing I did too, there's a spiritual component to it as well. I started getting out of the bars and clubs, and I started spending more time in the Word. I started spending more time in church. And to me, there are a lot of issues or whatever at church. I get it. Honestly, real talk, I did not see that much of a difference between girls I met at church and girls I met in the world. But I will say this, I do find that there are the women in church are a lot more applicable as far as this is a wife, as far as women to meet in a happy hour bar. So from a spiritual perspective, I started spending more time in churches, and I started spending less time in bars and clubs when I started looking for my wife.
I like it. I guess kind of speaking on church and maybe going back to your childhood and how you grew up, like what was life like for you? Like you mentioned being a military kid, and I'm guessing with that, you have to travel, maybe grow up and going to different schools and things like that. Can you describe that for me a little bit?
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. So the thing about being an Army kid is that my parents are both, my father was U.S. military 22 years. My mother was in the U.S. Army, I believe, for 23 years. They actually met at an Army base. So every 2 or 3 years growing up, I was living in a different, we were living in a different environment. And I also lived abroad as well. So being a military kid, it was cool because there were times where I was literally the only Black person for the most part in the entire school, because I was at a all white school, obviously. And there was other times I was the only Black kid or whatever at a school that, and it was full of, for the most part, mostly Hispanic people. And the thing that's kind of cool about Army bases is that you literally do see America at Army bases. The Air Force is a little different. But in general, at an Army base, it's like 15% African-American, like 18% Latino, like 5% Asian, and then like whatever, and then like 40 or 50% white American. So as a result, you literally do legit grow up around everybody. So it wasn't necessarily, I mean, I did deal with racial issues every now and then, but it was not necessarily a negative experience, because I got to experience the best and the worst of every culture. So being a military kid, it kind of prepared me for just kind of learning from everybody. So that was one experience about it. And additionally, my parents, I grew up in a very strict, very religious household. So I grew up reading the Bible. I grew up knowing all that kind of stuff. And it kind of gave me a spiritual basis as well, as far as what I wanted to do when I left the household, when I left my parents' house. So that was kind of what it was like growing up on a military base. I grew up once. I did definitely grow up waking up at 5 a.m. doing push-ups and sit-ups with my father and my mother, doing PT with them. It was a very disciplined household. My parents believed in the switch. And so it gave me a very good basis, because when I got to corporate America, I had an insanely good work ethic. I always made very good grades, and I was a very, very hard worker. And that has helped me as a mechanical engineer. And more importantly, it's also helped me as an entrepreneur.
Did you ever think about going the military route, given your parents' background, or what led you into engineering?
Absolutely. So I actually took the ASVAB when I was 18, did extremely well on it. And I wanted to be a U.S. Army Ranger. And my father talked me out of it. And you could probably guess my age. But if I had went in at that point, it would have been right at the beginning of Operation Enduring Freedom in Iraq. So I would have absolutely done some killing. Yeah. And my father talked me out of it, and my mother did as well. And then when I was 22, right when I graduated with my engineering degree, I was working for a mechanical engineering firm. And you never really lose that urge to like serve your country. I mean, still to this day, I shoot guns regularly. I told you I do earlier. I told you I do martial arts. Mm-hmm. You never really, if that's who you are, that's who you are. You never really lose that. So I was working at an engineering firm or whatever in downtown Philadelphia. And every day I walked past a recruiting station. And one day I walked by, I was like, you know what? Let me talk to this guy. So I talked to a brother and he basically was just like, hey, take this test. I took the ASVAB. I scored in the top, I think, 5% on the test for it, period. So the guy was like, with your educational pedigree and the fact, and basically what you scored with the ASVAB, you could literally get any MOS that you wanted. So when I told him special forces and everything like that, the guys are all right, cool. I just pulled up your file. You have no criminal record and you work for such and such a company. Walk into your office today, quit that job. And then you have to drive down to, I think it was North Carolina. And if you're serious about this process, I can get it. We can get it cracking. And also at the time I was competing full time as a semi-professional fighter, like Muay Thai and boxing and stuff like that. So I was in insanely good shape. So the recruiter looked me up and down, was like, you have the academics, you got the education, you got the work ethic, you got the, you come from a military background, I think you'd be great at it. And to make a long story short, I talked to my dad once again. He was adamant against me not doing it. He made it very clear. He was like, why in the world, if you have a mechanical engineering degree and you start your mechanical engineering career, why would you go to the front lines and be possibly have to deal with IEDs and stuff like that? So I did not actually serve. So that's my little military story. But I won't lie to you. Still to this day, it does cross my mind. A lot of the books that I read, Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willick, The Dichotomy of Leadership by Jocko Willick, Transformed by Remy Adeleke, Day of the Rangers or whatever, Black Hawk Down. I still read a lot of military books because to me, if you can command people in combat and in war, you can command them in the courtroom and in the boardroom. If you know how to lead men and women as well, in like a situation where they can literally not come back the same. If you learn those leadership principles, they apply extremely well to the entrepreneur and to the corporate America world. So, yep.
That makes sense. And I'm guessing with that, even although you haven't been able to serve, so to speak, or kind of scratch that itch, have you taken those principles and things that you've learned and lessons and try to apply them in your personal life? And I guess eventually leading into what you're doing now with your YouTube and finances.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So another aspect about being a military kid is that I got to see what a legit work ethic looks like. So for almost 15 years of my life, because obviously my parents were in the military before I was born, I saw them waking up at 4:30, 3:30 in the morning to get ready for PT. I saw them essentially learning their drills, doing their physical fitness, learning their commands, practicing their cadences, all that kind of stuff growing up. So it gave me a work ethic. And even still to this day, Asher, I wake up every morning at 3:30 in the morning or whatever to work out. That to me is my time. I have my worship, I work out, and then I get ready for my day. And I got that work ethic from being a military kid and as well as from playing sports. Additionally, one thing my father always said was that treat everybody right, put God first, and always do your best. Those three principles he got from the military, from his experience of being in the military or whatever. And those three principles I apply in every aspect of my life, whether I'm hooping and playing basketball, whether I'm fighting, kickboxing, or at the gym, or whether I'm in corporate America, or whether I'm working on my business as financial patient and doing and giving people financial consultations. That work ethic has been applicable in every aspect of my life. And that's one way that I apply it. That's one way I guess I scratch that military itch, because military dudes, from my experience anyway, from my parents, and then seeing like the work ethic like Jocko Willick, Remy Adeleke, Leif Babin, these are all like Matt Eversman. These are all like, if you follow YouTubers and military guys who are YouTubers, you're going to know those names I just got done saying. Mm-hmm. These guys have an insane work ethic. I mean, they're working 70, 80 hours a week. And to anyone that's listening, I'll say this. If you cannot work 40 hours a week in corporate America for somebody else, you're not going to be able to work 80 to 90 hours a week for yourself as an entrepreneur, period. You ain't going to make it. You ain't built for it. So if a good work ethic is something that has been instilled in me from my parents' military background and from just following some of the individuals who I do follow on social media and stuff, like David Goggins and people like that.
Yeah, I like that. And I guess for yourself, have you been able to work for yourself mostly now, or do you still...
Yeah.
Do the corporate type work?
I'm still in corporate. So I'm at the point now in my career where my company, I'm moving into a senior management position. I'm very happy about that. I'm the only one who looks like me. So it's definitely a blessing. But as a mechanical, as an MEP superintendent / mechanical engineer for my company, I'm getting to the point now where they're starting to, I'm starting to sit in boardrooms or whatever. And when my company works. So for instance, it's actually kind of a blessing. The other day, I was sitting at a facility and we were talking with an owner who was trying to determine whether they were going to give this particular $45 million job to our company or to another one. And me and the principal, the company I currently work for, we kind of sat down, we went over some notes or whatever, and we all basically sat as a team and we ended up winning this project. And that's the third job I've sat in where we won the job or whatever. So now I'm getting put in more training because they say, Chris, you're a very good public speaker. We like kind of the way that you present your knowledge as a from a technical standpoint and from a code standpoint with mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and fire alarm systems. And we want to start putting you in more of these meetings. And it's a blessing because once again, I am the only one who looks like me in these meetings 99% of the time.
Right.
So I'm still in corporate. And unlike a lot of guys, I actually do like what I do for a living. It is a lot of work or whatever. I do put in my 50 to 60 hours a week. But I think that it's not affecting me in any capacity as regards to financial patient. I can still do my consultations with people and I can still push, obviously, financial emancipation through generational knowledge. But another good thing I like about corporate as well, and I tell this to all my people, I like my employee sharing option programs. I like the 401k match that they give me. I like the company vehicles they give me. I like the per diem travel that I get. Yeah. And I like the healthcare that it gives me and my wife and my family. So I'm still in corporate and I plan on being there for, I'm here for a minute. I don't mind it, if you will.
Gotcha. I guess what would you say is something that people maybe don't understand about corporate? Because I guess maybe it depends on what type of corporation people work in. Because if you're not doing, say, engineering, science, math, any type of like technology field that's moving and that kind of compensates you for the work that you put in on the front end, whether it's through like getting your bachelor's, getting your master's, or whatever people may pursue, because now it's like someone can get a degree, so to speak. But then if you didn't do some kind of research to be like, okay, can I actually get a job with this? Is this job going to pay me for the work? And it's everyone wants to be happy in a sense. But I was listening to something earlier where it's like, when you say you want to be happy, that's not necessarily what you want. Maybe you're trying to communicate that you don't want to suffer as much as you have been, and you want to maybe have a sense of adventure. So like, what would you communicate to people to explain to them, like, although engineering may be hard, whether it's like the math that you have to take, the science, the rigorous process you have to go through, like, this is why it's worth it. And this is why it's not just like a skin color thing, but it's like the opportunities that are available to you in the field is actually, you're on the cutting edge of things. People drive things like Teslas, or for mechanical engineers specifically, I'm a civil engineer, so it's funny. We always had the joke that says like, we build the targets and you guys build the things that basically shoot the targets down or mess them up. But it's like, what can you explain to people that kind of got you into doing mechanical engineering, and like, what have you gained from it since being in corporate or working in a company, and then also having the opportunity to do something that's entrepreneur-like, but you're able to strike a balance between the two? It's like, this is important, but this also helps you get that.
Definitely. So I'll start at the beginning. That's about my why about engineering. I was always very good at math. That's the first thing. And one thing I noticed very early on was that math was the only thing that was, there's no racial component to mathematics. What I mean by that is this. I remember writing a paper very early. I think I was like second or third grade. And it was about, the Civil War. And I wrote it obviously from perspective of slavery is bad. And my teacher, who was white, basically disagreed with certain things about what I said. I don't remember specifically what it was about or whatever, but I ended up getting a C on a paper that I should have got an A on. And when me and my teacher talked about it, whatever it was, I don't remember what it was, it really rubbed me in the wrong way that they thought that she thought this way about the Civil War and I thought this way. It may have been, I don't know, states' rights versus slavery or whatever. I don't remember what the actual issue was. In any event, I remember thinking to myself, this is the reason why I don't like English, because it's subjective. If I write something and a person does not like me or like the person who wrote it, they can literally sabotage my chances of basically making a good grade. But no matter how much my math teachers hated me, 1 + 1 was always 2. 3 × 3 is always 9. So to me, mathematics was the only thing that was 100% non-subjective. If it's right, if it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong. If the building stands, you built it correctly. If a building collapses, you failed. Simple as that. So that's my why about engineering. I always thought it was cool how people like it's actually kind of civil and more structural. But I always thought it was kind of dope how the engineers that built, for instance, the Great Pyramid. I've been to Africa a couple of times. Mm-hmm. The thing is still standing today. It's like, over 10,000 years old. Mm-hmm. So whoever built that, 10,000 years of human beings have been looking at that. With the Great Wall of China, same thing. They built that thousands of years ago and it's still standing to this day. So I was like, okay, if you're an engineer and you build stuff, the entire world for centuries is to look at it and marvel it. So that's my why about engineering. As far as the challenging aspect about it, yes, engineering is a beast. I won't lie. That was the hardest thing academic I've ever done in my life. My 4 years of undergrad, I have buddies that went from engineering to med school, and they said that the 4 years of engineering was very comparable to how challenging med school was. So that was the hardest thing I ever did in my life. But I always tell people, and I actually have a lot of podcasts about this, about the most important college degrees to get and degrees that'll make you a millionaire. If you're thinking about going the college route or whatever, and you don't want to learn a trade, you don't want to go to the Marines or become a police officer, if you're thinking about going the college route, this is the reason why you should consider a degree in engineering. The average mechanical engineer makes about $80,000 a year starting out of college. Depending on the part of the country, in New York, it can be as high as $100,000. In a place like Missouri or whatever, it can be like $75,000. In any event, you start off with a very high salary in mechanical engineering. Additionally, the last time I checked, the unemployment rate for a mechanical engineer right now in America is like 1.1%. People, I'm a mechanical engineer. I get job offers literally every week to work in like Dubai, Singapore, Washington, D.C., Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Los Angeles, Toronto, South America, everywhere. If you get an engineering degree, people, not only will you have a very affluent lifestyle, you are also literally always going to have a job, particularly if you become a professional engineer and you get licensed. So that's another good thing I like about engineering. Yes, it's very hard or whatever, but it rewards you very well. The analogy I use is, imagine it's like dating a very bad woman for a couple, for like 4 years of your life. And she makes your life absolute hell for 4 years. But after you graduate and you get that degree, she says, okay, now I'm gonna start treating you right. And for the rest of your life, she takes perfect care of you or whatever. That is how I describe engineering. It's the most brutal 2.5 to 3 years of your life, because your freshman year is kind of easy. But besides that, it is no joke, but it's so worth it or whatever. And on top of that, another thing I love about engineering is that you're going to appreciate this as a civil engineer, because I'm more so on the building side of mechanical engineering. Mm-hmm. When I fly into cities like Washington, D.C. or Orlando, or I fly into cities like Chicago or cities like Miami, I can literally point out from the window all the buildings I helped design and build, or I did forensic depositions on, or I helped inspect, or I helped basically, I designed the mechanical systems for. If I fly into Egypt, it's the same way. If I fly into a lot of cities all across this country, I can point out my work. And nothing is cooler than to feel like taking your wife or your girlfriend out on a date in a building and say, yeah, I built that building right there. I designed that building. As an engineer, literally, people, that is the coolest feeling in the world. Still to this day, I can walk through a building that I helped build 15 years ago, and I still get the same giddy, childish feeling that I got when I was in my early 20s that I get right now. And it never gets old. And I can see from the way you're smiling, Asher, you agree with me, but it literally never gets old. That is the benefit of being an engineer. That's the reason why I say it's worth it. You'll always have a job. If your boss, you could cuss your boss out tomorrow. I don't know, but I do not advise you to do this, but you will always have a job. If your boss talks to you crazy, you can get a job within seconds or whatever. You get paid a very affluent six-figure lifestyle. And on top of that, it opens you up to so many entrepreneurial ventures. And the last thing I'll say as well, Asher, I have an MBA as well in finance. So that's what I got my graduate degree in. And that's one of the journeys that put me on finance education. I was already good at, I was like, I think learning the financial component of being an engineer is what's next. And that's why I got on my financial journey as far as financial patients. So I've created my secondary business in addition to my engineering career. And I honestly love them both. Engineering gives me the money. Finance teaches me how to invest it. So, yep.
I like that. And to your point, getting your MBA, like, what has that taught you about actually the business of engineering? Because I think one thing I saw kind of earlier on, and as I'm going into it, I'm in a different field of civil engineering now than I started out in construction. Now I'm doing more soils, where it's everything below the ground you never see, but at least you can be like, okay, we worked on these projects here. Like, what is learning about money from the books, but actually having to apply it and practice it and actually being in a business that's being run? And it's like, okay, we're billing you at this rate, or like, we have to bid this project per this price because this is how the money flows. Like, what has that kind of taught you about maybe the world at large, or just the world that you operate in?
Money legitimately makes the world go round. The thing that I love about the financial components that I've essentially learned by having an MBA, Asher, is that as a group of people, we have had a very interesting ride in the United States of America. I love America, but let's be honest. We have had some very diabolical things happen to our people living in this country. And one of the biggest things that I think has hurt the African-American and the Caribbean-American community when they come to America is that we are flat out not taught how to invest our money, period. And I always push back on people when they say that Black people are poor. We're not poor. There are more Black men, there are more male Black millionaires in America than any other group of people, with the exception of white Americans. Let me say that again. There are more Black men in America that are millionaires or whatever, that make over $250,000, than any other group of men in this country, Asian, Hispanic, or Indian, with the exception of white American men. Additionally, if you take a look at the number of Black American men that are lawyers, doctors, engineers, and scientists or whatever, we are not a poor group of people. The problem is, we've never been taught how to properly invest. And that, to me, is what an MBA helped me with. It kind of taught me essentially, okay, what's the purpose of going with particularly a penny stock when you can go with an index fund? It kind of taught me, okay, if you want to read a stock sheet, this is how you do it. It taught me, okay, if you basically invest $500 a month or whatever into this particular fund or whatever, this is how much money you're going to have. So actually, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Let me put some numbers real quick, because I like to do this example. When you take a girl on a date, how much money do you typically spend for it? Just take throw a number out there.
Let's go 40 to 80.
Or I got you.
Higher side, yeah.
So let's do $80 or whatever. So let's say you put $80 into, let's say you take a girl out every weekend or whatever, for 52 weeks or whatever, 52 weeks, I'm sorry. So let's say you put $80 or whatever into this particular girl you're dating. And let's say for interest rate, I'm just going to be pretty easy. I'm going to say 2%, okay? Mm-hmm. $80, 2%, I mean 12% or whatever. And let's say you do that for 40 years, right? Mm-hmm. Income, $80. How much money do you think you would have basically thrown away or invested by taking out one girl every weekend on an $80 date or whatever for 40 years? How much money do you think that's going to be? Take a guess.
I'd say like $150,000.
$790,000.
Oh, jeez.
So, bro, if you invest, and this is what I always tell dudes, if you invest the same money you're spending basically to take women on dates or whatever, invest that same amount every month or whatever for 40 years into the correct index fund or to the correct stock or into the correct mutual fund. And everybody, I do this or whatever, so I can tell you which funds, book a session with me. I can tell you which funds to go with. Mm-hmm. And bro, by investing literally $80 every week for 52 weeks or whatever, for 40 years, you just cost yourself $790,000. Now, that's how much money you can invest just by putting $80 a week into it. So that's why I tell dudes, instead of dropping money on those Jordans, on those $400 Jordans, whatever, instead of spending money or whatever, making a range at the club, instead of basically spending money on alcohol, instead of spending money just renting different women or whatever, start investing your money. Yeah. Basically, walk into your HR lady's office and be like, look, do we have an HSA? Okay, cool. Do we have a 401k match? Okay, cool. What percentage do we match? That to me is essentially what the financial component of getting an MBA helps. Yeah, I've been on bids and everything. I've said, okay, my per rate hours of engineer should be $300 an hour, not $250. I've done all that kind of stuff. But to me, the meat and bones of why I love finance is because to me, you cannot discriminate against a person if they understand basically how to build generational wealth. If a person knows I'm not going to spend $100 or whatever buying another pair of shoes, I'm going to put $100 or whatever into my 401k or whatever, or into my Roth IRA, max that out every year. This is how much money I'm having in retirement. That to me can change an entire course of the way your family's generational tree is running. And I talk about all this stuff. When your son is born, basically open up a trust for them. Every black person should have a will. Every person, period, or whatever, should look into maxing out their Roth IRAs or their 401ks. That to me, kind of, I would say the financial component to it. And yeah, I've also done finance in corporate America as well. But with that, I'm helping a millionaire become a billionaire. I'd much rather help a person move from the projects into the middle class, from the middle class and upper middle class. That to me is what I love about investing in finance. That's what I love the most about it.
I like that. And I guess to your point, it's like even in helping a billionaire or millionaire become a billionaire, it's like you're getting on the job training to do that for yourself. And like the thing is, you get a chance to activate the switch, because at the end of the day, you get a choice in the matter. And for what you're saying, it's like, I like the simplicity of the example of saying, okay, if you're going to spend $80 on a date, it's not to say don't go on a date, but at least understand where the money goes. And then kind of going back to the example of when you said like understanding the value of marriage, if you're looking at the financial component and being like, okay, well, when you were single, you would do this. But now that you have a partner, like you can tag your partner and be like, hey, how about we do this? We can go out this week, or we can do this for this month, or we can do that. And it's like, it's cool to see how you have people that that are always, they could say like maybe 9-to-5 people, but like the entrepreneurs really depend on the 9-to-5 people, because it's like without somebody buying your thing, then you don't have like an audience, you don't have a market, you don't have a share. And it's good to see people that seem like they may have less or they may make little, but they always know how to move their money. They know where to place it. And being able to see things like that, whether it's like you go through and you do the MBA, but I like how you describe learning how to read an index fund, like learning how to look at certain things. Because initially when I thought about it, I was like, okay, maybe I'll go get an MBA in order to, yes, understand a business better, but maybe start a business or be like, okay, you can go do the schoolwork for 2 years, or you can like try and start a business, like get the business for dummies or something like right, that, and like right. Try to figure it out on the go, like trial and error. And it's like, I don't think there's any wrong way to do it, but there's something to be said about working smarter than harder, because it's like you can work hard. And I think there is value to it. Like you said, physically making your body do things to kind of submit yourself to a discipline. And then, you know, hey, I don't always have to be in fight or flight mode, but I know enough about myself as to how I need to carry myself. And now if something goes on, I'm not completely lost. Like, what do I do now? It's like, Absolutely. You have an idea of what's going on because you've kind of put yourself through a scenario to be like, okay, this happens, this happens, this happens, this happens. It's like, you don't want to be stuck in freeze mode and just be like, okay, let me play this movie out that I imagine in my mind. And it's like, it's exactly. In a movie, somebody just walks up and smacks you. It's like, wake up.
You said something that I agree so much with. A lot of times people, it literally is about just getting started. The best analogy I ever heard about what being an entrepreneur is, it's literally like somebody grabbing you saying, okay, everything that you have that you need to build this parachute is inside this book bag, and then pushing off a cliff. And you got 5,000 feet to figure out how to build that parachute before you die. That is essentially what being an entrepreneur is, people. A lot of it literally is just getting started. When I first got started being a YouTuber, literally, I had no idea what I was doing. I knew there were certain topics I wanted to talk about, and I knew that I needed to entertain my crowd to basically bring them into watch my content. So if you watch some of my initial stuff, it was about finance, but I talked about a whole lot of other stuff as well. But it was because I needed to entertain people to kind of get them in the door. It's the same way with a lot of the things in life. A lot of aspects about being an entrepreneur is that you have to just legitimately get started. And that's what a lot of people make the mistake of. They get the education, they get the academic pedigree, they learn what they need to learn, but they don't actually take the actual initiative to say, okay, let me start my LLC, let me get my EIN number and just start the business. So yeah, I have a question for you, Asher.
Yeah.
You're a civil engineer. You obviously, I can hear from where you're talking that you have the entrepreneurial bug. Have you considered getting like your PE license and like the consulting and doing that, going that route? Or are you kind of thinking about doing what I did and kind of starting another business completely separate to some extent from engineering? What's your take on it?
I've thought about, like, recently I took the PE exam and I tried taking it a few years back, but it was just, I didn't pass it. And I was kind of discouraged about it. So I was like, I kind of want to forget about it for the month. But as I sit on it, I'm like, I want to take and pass the PE exam personally to be able to say, okay, hey, like you got the degree. I got out the door because I was like, let me go and see if this engineering thing applies. Like, did I learn this stuff to make it make sense? And now in doing engineering work, it's like, okay, you're learning foundation design, or like you go out and you physically do something, but now you got to sit down and like think and put it, like, it seems simple when you read a report back to like, okay, here's what we did. Yeah. Here's what we analyzed in the lab. And like, here's what we recommend. But now like sitting down and putting that together from scratch, it's like, I guess the short answer is, I don't know. Like, I'd like to think that I want to do it, but at the same time, I want to be clear on my conviction. So I think it would be good, but I don't want to operate on the, okay, hey, this is a fun thing to do right now. And then like the excitement kind of fades off and I'm like, oh, let me go to the next thing. It's like, no, like do this thing because you find some enjoyment in it. Yeah. It's helping someone. And ultimately, you can move it past like 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. And maybe if all it is 2 years, maybe that's it and you move on to the next thing. But that's where my mind is on it right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Definitely. You won't go wrong if you get it. I can tell you that. I can promise you that.
I guess for you, what made the difference when you got yours, or like leading up to it, what were you kind of thinking about it?
Well, I'm actually not a PE yet. That's been the one professional thing that I have not been able to achieve yet. And I'm saying yet because it just hasn't happened yet. I got to a point in my life where I had a couple other businesses and ventures that I wanted to kind of get into and start. So I started those. And Financipation is obviously one of them. And it's financially has worked out very well for me. I mean, I can say just from the year, I can say from the time period that I've been on running Financipation, my wife's and my investment portfolio has literally tripled. So it's been a very good ride and I've enjoyed it. And for what I do for a living at this point, having a PE license is not necessarily going to help me in corporate, but it is going to help me if I decide to start an engineering firm or a consulting firm, which I do actually want to start one day. So gotcha. It's one of those things, like you said, Ash, it's I haven't achieved it yet. It's on the not the back burner, but it's something I want to achieve. I was interviewing a young lady one time. She referred to herself as a mompreneur. And she said, the thing about life is that things kind of sometimes have to happen in phases. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm in my phase of being a father, having a young child or whatever, running a business, being in corporate America. I'm not quite yet at the phase yet where I'm just gonna go ham on studying for the PE or whatever. But right, when I get to the phase of my life, that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna run just as hard as I run everything else, I would say.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And I guess like if you were to start your own practice, like what would be your motivation there? Like,
I think earlier we talked a little bit about just being Black in America and kind of wanting to change negative stereotypes. And to me, there's a couple of ways you do that. One, you get financially literate. Two, you take care. You basically are a good husband and a good father. Mm-hmm. Like being a man that's, you see people see holding your son or holding your daughter and being a good, respectable husband and father, that destroys so many stereotypes. Yeah. Just by doing that. And another aspect about destroying stereotypes is by being a business owner. One of the reasons why certain communities have done so well in America is because they start businesses, they employ them, they employ people who look like them, and they basically keep that thing rinse and repeat for generations to come.
Right.
So
right.
That's one of my impetuses as far as if I decided to start a engineering firm or a consulting firm or whatever, why I would want to do it, because it'd be something I could give my child or whatever someday, or somebody else who I felt could actually run it. I thought about the type of commissioning company I would like to start. I thought about the type of mechanical, electrical, plumbing, fire alarm consulting firm I would like to start. I mean, I thought about all that kind of stuff. It's just a P. Mm-hmm. That's what I got to get. Gotcha. But right now, running Financial Patient, I found through the financial consulting and through helping people essentially build generational wealth, that feeling has been very, watching me help people with their finances and teaching them how to invest has been extremely rewarding. So for now, I'm kind of good with just doing the financial thing. But when I get my PE license, we'll see. It's definitely, I have the skill set, I have the pedigree, I have the knowledge to basically run a consulting firm, to run an engineering firm. So
yeah.
When I get to that phase in life, Asher, I'll let you know, bro, okay?
Yeah, that's awesome. It's funny because you talk about like the people you keep around you, and like three of my friends from college, they're all married and they've started families. So it's like seeing them, I'm not envious, but I'm proud to be in relation to them, because I'm like, it's good to see that if anything character-wise would rub off from them to me is like the lightness that they carry about themselves, where they're serious about their work, but they are jokesters, where it's like they know that you have to enjoy life and appreciate life. So like we may have like a group chat kind of going back and forth, and we'll send like a joke clip or something like that. And it's like, oh yeah, like they may have other, like we're living different lives, but they don't necessarily show it or like cry out like, oh man, life is hard, like woe is me. It's like, no, like they do life, and we try and share it in like moments if we can get together for like a game or like we did last year, and just kind of being around each other, walking around the campus. And it's like, oh wow, like look at all these renovations that they did. And they start talking about maybe it would be a place to bring your kids back to. And it's one of those things like you talk about just graduating. I never heard it described as like a woman that treats you badly and then decides to treat you nice. But it's like, I remember when I went to Georgia Tech for the latter part to get my degree, but I went to a smaller school before, which was like a sister school of it. And then I transferred for the last 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And it did kind of feel like an abusive relationship. Kind of, it's like you've got like 4 or 5 classes lined up for a semester, and you're like, are all these teachers conspiring against me to just be like, hey, what do you got on the schedule? What do you got? Okay, we'll line them up Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's like before they know it, they'll just be spinning out. Like they won't know what hit them. And it's like when you have a little bit of that time removed from the place, it's like you learn to actually appreciate like the institution. You appreciate some of what was taught. I think maybe seeing things online now where things are going maybe woke, or like different people are bringing things in, I'm like, I think the sciences are still safe, but it's good to see that going back to how science, math aren't really subjective. It's like, it is what it is. There's room for you to innovate, and you're encouraged to create new things and think outside the box. But it's like, we don't, like you're going through so much rigorous training, you don't really have time to be concerned with other things, or you don't bring other things into it. It's like, okay, yeah, the world is happening, but we get together to like solve this problem. And then once we solve that, we go on with life. And then when it's back to work, it's work, and we do the other things. We don't have to compete with one thing or another. It's like when you're doing engineering, you're building relationships with people, with clients. And like even being in a town now, in South Georgia. It's like literally seeing people that have grown up in the area, they've gone to school, come back, and they're watching their town grow before them. And they're getting involved with like other people locally and communicating like, this is what's going on. This is how this law may affect this, or this is how this going down the line will kind of impact things. And they're raising kids and their kids are going off to college. And it's like, huh, okay, now you have to consider that. And it's like, just your value of what's important kind of shifts and changes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You mentioned something earlier, Asher. I also wanted to bring up engineering. And this is kind of one of the very cool things about it in regards to like climate change, current, all these stupid agendas kind of going through politics and stuff like that. It's very interesting because as a civil engineer, I believe in climate change. Climate change is real. I'm just going to go ahead and say it's real. It exists. If you don't believe it, all right, whatever. 99% of scientists and scientific professionals, they believe it exists. It exists. But as a civil engineer, you deal a lot with the environmental aspects of climate change in regards to what it's doing to our world. And as a result, you are always going to be employed. As a mechanical engineer, every day I talk to my clients and say, okay, Chris, we need you to figure out how to build this building and design this building so it uses less energy, less fossil fuels. And instead of me spending $1 million a month or whatever for heating, ventilation, air conditioning, and cooling, I only want to spend $750,000 a month. Figure it out. And the reason why I want you to figure it out is because fossil fuels are getting more expensive or whatever. And with solar panel cells and electrical systems and things like that, people are starting to move more EV. So as a result, I'm always going to be employed as well, because people always want to basically have cars that run that are more fuel efficient. They want to have buildings that use less fossil fuel and it costs them less money. And they also want to make sure their buildings are more like LEED platinum and LEED gold, so that as a result, it costs them less money in the long haul. And that's the beauty of engineering, everybody. Unfortunately, our world is getting jacked up, but because of engineers, we fix the problems that human beings are causing. And as a result, always going to be employed. And another thing I love about engineering is that when we talk about how hard it is, that skill set that you have to essentially put together to figure out how to solve a mathematical equation, or how to solve a very complicated chemical formula, how to come together with other people and build a project or build some kind of thing that you can present to, the state of North Carolina or the state of Florida or the state of California or whatever. That skill set goes to so many different other ways. I killed business school and thought it was very easy when I got my MBA because engineering was so hard. As a result, when I got to corporate America, I've transitioned into being a depositions expert. I've transitioned into construction. I've transitioned into pure engineering. I've transitioned into finance, because the same skill set that I needed to use to make it through engineering and survive engineering, I've used in other aspects of my career as well. And I love how you brought that up as well, Asher, because like you said, people are raising their children, they're sending their kids to college, and it's kind of starting to look back and say, wow, look how my town and how my city is growing and stuff like that. And that's generational wealth. And that's also the beauty, I would say, of engineering, and the beauty of getting a 21st century degree.
Yeah. And I think the thing, I hope that doesn't get missed, is that whatever may be the popular thing of the day, it's like things evolve, and like there's multiple ways to solve a problem. So I guess it's never like one size fits all. And I guess one thing that maybe gets forgotten, and maybe I forget it too, but knowing that originally coming from the other side of the world and having a glimpse from time to time to see how like a third world country lives versus like first world, it's like you have first world problems and third world problems, and they're not always the same. And sometimes it's like, despite what someone's objections may be or what they feel, it's like, this is what's important right now. One thing, at least psychologically, that's helping me is understanding, kind of going back to like being physically fit and mentally fit to do something. And that plays into like your emotions, your spirituality, and your finances, is that if you become like a tyrant, or if you become very demanding of other people, telling them this is how you have to do things without making those same expectations of yourself first, or being able to lead in a way to say, okay, this is what's going to be expected of me, and you have the right to kind of hold me to the standard. But it's like, if the roles are reversed, usually it's like, that's not the person you want to be leading out something, because it's, once somebody gets control of something, they're less likely to relinquish it. And if they're possessed about something, it's like when it, like an idea has a hold of you, it's hard for it to let you go or you don't even realize like what's going on, but it's in seeing like whether people are looking at fossil fuels or they're looking at electrical, like having a balance of both, because I worked in like on a nuclear plant in like for 4 years and it's finally come online. And one of the things I've seen is like the debates or the conversations get interesting once you start talking to different people and you kind of ask the question of like, okay, this is good to have, but like, where's the source of it? Where does it come from at the end of the day? And it's like, okay, do you know, or are you in touch with the person that has to go get that? Because for instance, like everybody raves about like the smartphones or whatnot, but it's like, if some people are aware of like who makes their smartphones or how they get it, it's like, I don't want to have that conversation. Just give me my phone so I can share my pictures and like order my food and do this. But it's like being able to communicate with different people in different fields without feeling the weight of like, I've got to solve all the world's problems. It's like, no, like if you solve the challenges that meet you in life, it helps you to be a service to someone else. That way it's like, you don't just show up being like, I know everything that's got to be done. And like, this is the only way that's going to be done. But it's like, it's very cool being able to talk with a fellow engineer and seeing like the rigorous process that you've not only gone through yourself, but like how you're using your experience and your talents to help other people get a leg up in life and actually be financially liberated and emancipated.
Exactly. And that's what it's about, Asher. That's what it's about. God gives you a skill set that you can use to help people. I don't care where you come from, what you look like or whatever. All of us have a skill set that he's given us that we are just extraordinary. And some people it's sports, some people it's blue collar, some people like me and you, it's white collar. And whatever that skill set is, hone it, perfect it, and then use it to help the world around you. And it's a beautiful thing. It really is.
That's awesome. And how can people get in touch with you to follow your channel, find out what you'll be doing in the future, if you'll be in their town or something like that, or you'd be able to point out buildings that you've worked on and different things?
Definitely. So I run a YouTube channel, obviously. It's called Financipation, just like you see on my hoodie. And it's like you see basically in my sign back there, Financipation. I drop new content every Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So typically my podcast deals with finances, investing money, saving money, making money, credit repair, how to build generational wealth. Occasionally I talk about other aspects of financial wealth, such as marrying the right women, dating, relationships, stuff like that. But 90% of my content is in regards to making money, saving money, investing money, and financially emancipating yourself from generational poverty. Additionally, you can find me on Instagram at @TheReal_Financipation. You can find me on Spotify, Financipation, just like it's spelled on my shirt. I'm in my hoodie. I'm on TikTok. And additionally, I have a financial blog or whatever that I drop every week as well for $4.99 a month. I go into more detail and more depth as far as, okay, this is the financial principles that you can use to build generational wealth. I tell everybody, I'm not necessarily 100% giving you financial advice or whatever. I basically tell you the things that have worked for myself, for my family, for the people who I've mentored for like the last 20 years. So I want you to do your own independent, thorough research in regards to what you decide to invest in. But certain financial principles, they work. Over the last 100 years, some of the funds that I've invested in myself, they have literally never lost money. They have went up every year for the last 100 years. Those are the kind of investments I tell people to do. There's other timely types of advice, like I said earlier, about investing into your employer's 401k match. And there's a lot of other different things that I tell people to do in regards to, okay, this is how much money you have. This is how much money you're going to have. Like that dating analogy I gave you earlier, that's the kind of stuff that I kind of tell people to do. And then there's other things that I go into more detail about. Additionally, everybody, I'm pretty sure once we post this and everything, you're going to be able to find my email. You're going to be able to find my website below, www.therealfinancipation.com. Send me a message. I'll add you to my client email list, where I email thousands of people every week in regards to different topics that I'm going to be discussing and talking about. Mm-hmm. And I thoroughly like this. If engineering is my vocation in my career, finance and financial emancipation is a vocation and a hobby of mine. I thoroughly enjoy it. I look at it kind of like as a ministry that God has put me on this earth to do, because I've always been good with money. I've always been good at flipping that thing and making more. And I thoroughly enjoy what I do. So, yeah, both in my vocation and as a and in financipation. So, yep.
That's awesome. And one last question I have for you, kind of going back to how we started. Are you still who you said you were?
In regards to?
Just as a person, what you do, what you like.
Yes, I am still a follower of Christ. I'm still madly in love with my beautiful wife. I'm still doing everything I possibly can. I'm not perfect, but and being a father every day, I realize how much I fail, but I'm still doing everything I can to be a better husband, to be a better father. I still do everything I possibly can. It's actually funny. Before we hop on this call, I was checking some emails and doing some stuff for my corporate job. So it never ends. So I'm still doing everything I possibly can to become a better MEP superintendent and mechanical engineer. And I still work out about 10 times a week, about an hour and a half every day at least. And I still thoroughly enjoy just trying to be the kind of Black man that they do not show on television, who's financially set, who's healthy, who's in shape, who loves his wife, and who basically is doing everything I possibly can to build up the community around me. They don't show brothers like us on television, Asher, unfortunately. So I'm doing my part to destroy the stupid stereotypes that everyone pushes, unfortunately, including our own people sometimes. So, yep.
Yeah, but I think that's all right, because part of the reason I decided to do this is to provide something else, because it's like, if you don't like what you see in the world, you need to change it by what you do. And I think people are well aware of, like, TV, social media, and things like that aren't real life. And just being able to get out and be encouraged to connect with your fellow man, with your fellow neighbor, and actually get to know who is around you. And that way you're less likely to treat the other person like a foreigner or a stranger that you always have to be in competition with or at war with, to where it's like, there's got to be a fight over something small or something like that. But it's like, hey, just take a minute to at least acknowledge someone, nod at them or wave, say hello, just be courteous.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, you're right. You're right. How about yourself, Asher? What got you into wanting to do the YouTube? And I agree with you, by the way. I got sick and tired of seeing nothing but guys on Facebook and YouTube interviewing rappers and musicians and actors. I have interviewed rappers, full disclosure, musicians on Finance Patient. But to me, I'd much rather talk to engineers like yourself or medical doctors. I'd much rather talk to a female entrepreneur, deck and millionaire, those types. That's kind of the people I like to talk to. But what got you into wanting to be a YouTuber, I would say?
Well, I mean, for me, I guess it wasn't YouTube initially, but I like listening to podcasts. And just at the time that I was working at the nuclear plant, I felt like I was getting burnt out with the 60 plus hours. And it just felt like, okay, you're doing all this work and you don't really have a hobby outside of it. You don't, maybe I'll go run, work out or something like that. But it didn't feel like I was putting energy into creating anything. So I thought in enjoying conversations and maybe having a chance to reach out and connect with people, it was like, okay, I've met a group of people or a lot of people through college, through entrepreneur-like events, like going and plugging myself into different groups like Toastmasters to become better at public speaking, or just I wanted to develop myself to be more than I may appear to be. It's like, okay, you're soft-spoken, or you're like, I don't know. It's like, maybe he played basketball, he's 6'2" or something like that. It's like, no, I wrestle. And just having a chance to develop as a person and actually learning what other people are about. I noticed that in maybe outside of work or outside of school, I didn't really put a lot of time and attention into developing relationships to actually know how to talk to people and get to know people. And when I did, I noticed that you could meet a complete stranger and you seem to develop a great relationship with them more so than like a family member. And I was like, well, okay, there might be something to that, like actually taking time to notice other people. And it's helped me to kind of get to notice myself and to give grace to my family members and to be like, maybe I shouldn't carry on the history of like, well, you didn't say this to me or you said this to me. And it's like, okay, like people make mistakes. And if you just keep carrying the mistakes of people around their necks, they're never going to own up to or live to be the better versions of themselves that you think you're going to find out in the world. So it's like in going out and seeing people that present maybe an ideal life, I've learned more about myself and I've learned to appreciate those around me to be like, I got it pretty good. So that's what kind of encouraged me to do this, to see the good in people and to just make room for the people that are around me and not act like I just got to operate in my silo to just find the better part of what's good.
I got you. I got you. Yeah, I like it, man. As we wrap it up and everything, because I got to bounce. This has been dope, man. And please continue to podcast. I want to see more of us doing this. And like I said, there's nothing wrong with interviewing rappers and all that kind of stuff. And if that's the realm you want to play in, do it. I mean, you got every, like, there's so many YouTube channels out here, particularly people who look like us. We're talking about hip hop. We're talking about what color Ciara's thong was, or what color, I don't know, Cardi B's dress was. It is what it is. But like, I want to see more podcasters doing what we're doing, talking about engineering, talking about financial freedom, talking about financial literacy, talking about financial emancipation. And keep doing what you're doing, because I love it. And Ashley, this has been a pleasure, man. I'm definitely going to edit this thing. I'm going to cut it up, and I'm definitely going to post it on my channel as well. Okay. So yeah. Yes, so where can everybody find you at as well, bro?
Oh yeah. It's My Time Podcast everywhere on IG, Twitter, Facebook. Just check it out. Check out the website. And of course, just greet your neighbor and greet yourself when you look in the mirror. Absolutely. Don't forget you.
Absolutely. And by the way, bro, I do financial one-on-one consultation. So if you want to book a session, you are more than welcome. Just go to my website and I got you. Okay. We can walk through your budget, walk through different types of financial packages that you can start to invest in. And like I said, me and my wife have literally tripled, almost quadrupled our investment portfolio since me and her got married. So it's been a blessing. It truly has, man. So,
yep. For sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Ash. I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
You're welcome.